Hearty greetings to all our VOA listeners, and happy 75th birthday to the Voice of America. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Egypt will play Burkina Faso this evening in the first semifinal at the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Gabon. Kickoff is scheduled for 1900 GMT UTC in Gabon's capital, Libreville. Ghana will go against Cameroon in the second semifinal on Thursday in Gabon's southeastern city of Franceville. Of the four teams left in the African football showpiece, Egypt has the proudest Nations Cup pedigree. The Pharaohs of Egypt have lifted the trophy a record 7 times. The Black Stars of Ghana and the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon have each won 4 Nations Cup titles. The Stallions of Burkina Faso, meanwhile, are hoping to gallop their way to their first African title. They almost broke through 4 years ago in Johannesburg, where they lost to Nigeria 1-0 in the Nations Cup final. Burkina Faso's Portuguese head coach, Paulo Duarte, says the Egyptians will be a tough test this evening in Libreville.
The Egypt team is a very strong team. Very talented players, very experienced players. Is the country you have more and more teachers. So it's not easy for Burkina Faso, I know. But I know too, the game is not easy to Egypt. So I want my players more quickly, more concentrated, more intelligent, and they wait more goals. I want to win.
That's Paulo Duarte, the Portuguese head coach of Burkina Faso's national football team, and he was speaking in Libreville, Gabon. On this 75th anniversary of the first Voice of America broadcast, I'd like my VOA producer this evening, Bill Werkinger, to kick it!
Kick it!
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Now let's go to India's northern state of Haryana. That's where an increasing number of young women are taking to wrestling, a sport that has not been traditionally open to them in a deeply patriarchal society. As Anjana Pasricha reports, wrestling is helping change conservative attitudes toward women after many scored victories in international competition.
On a chilly winter morning, a group of young girls and women do warm-up exercises ahead of a grueling three-hour training session at the Chotu Ram Stadium in Rohtak town in India's northern Haryana state. 12-year-old Meenakshi begins practice at 6 a.m. before she heads to school. Like the other women and girls, her inspiration is female wrestler Sakshi Malik, who trained at this stadium and shot to national fame after bagging a bronze medal at the 2016 Olympic Games.
Only 9 seconds, she made her life wonderful, completed.
Wrestling for women was frowned upon in the conservative state that is known for its male-dominated village councils and sex-selective abortions. But a slow change began after two women made their mark as world-class wrestlers at the 2010 Commonwealth Games. When Coach Mandeep came to the stadium 6 years ago, only a handful of girls learned wrestling. Now he is inundated with questions as scores of parents have overcome traditional taboos and wrestling has become a rage.
Earlier, parents stopped the girls and kept them at home because that was the social norm. Now parents are supporting them and fulfilling their ambitions. It's a huge social change.
Many of them, like 17-year-old Tina Malik, who has bagged a national medal, have come from villages where women are often covered from head to toe and where girls could not mix with boys.
Earlier, even for practice, we could not wear clothes like this. Now we can wear this sports gear. No one objects.
It is not just the attire that is liberating. Dreams are getting fired as they emerge from the shadows of tradition to pack power and punch in a bout of wrestling. Pinky Malik, the daughter of a farmer, has already won a gold medal at the 2016 Commonwealth Championship and is determined to emerge on top in the next Olympics. But medals are not the only achievement.
Women should get respect. That's the biggest issue, respect. Wrestling will improve things for us.
As their success changes traditional attitudes, wrestling has become the unlikely path helping Haryana's young girls and women break barriers and write their own future. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Rohtak, Haryana.
Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me, I'm Heather Maxwell, for Music Time in Africa, every Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. We look forward to your next Music Time in Africa program. As I mentioned, the Voice of America is officially celebrating its 75th birthday today, Wednesday, February 1st. A little personal note, my first sports report for the VOA was almost 30 years ago. And if you're keeping score, the Sunny Side of Sports had its genesis almost 20 years ago at the 1998 World Cup in France, where I engaged in friendly football banter with the late, great King Richard Coty, VOA's gallant Ghanaian. As I look back on the various sports personalities I've interviewed over the years, one of my favorites, without question, was the late, great Hall of Fame boxing trainer Angelo Dundee, who died exactly 5 years ago on February 1st, 2012, at age 90. Angelo was in Muhammad Ali's corner throughout his professional career. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again as I ask Angelo about Ali's epic fight with George Foreman in 1974, The Rumble in the Jungle.
Hello.
Hey, Angelo.
Yeah.
This is Sonny Young from Voice of America.
Yeah.
How you doing?
All right.
Angelo, reflect a little bit. What are your main memories of that fight in the former Zaire?
Well, you know, it's such an event. You know, you get there and we're the good guys, you know, right there, Ali Boumaye. And he was like a hero there. And the Zaire people are so goddamn nice. It's a shame, you know, the country's having their problems. And everybody I met there was so congenial and nice. And the fun part of it was a guy named Chimpupu Chimpupu Wa Chimpupa. He was the PR guy.
Okay.
And he'd make us go. See, we were outside of Kinshasa. We were like 45 minutes away in the government complex called Nasseli. That's where they entertain all the African nations. And we all had villas facing the Congo River. And God forbid we said Congo River. It was going to get called the Zaire River. And we used to look forward to going to the gym every day. In fact, on my off duties, I used to train lizards. It made a good hit with the newspaper guys. When they came, it was a rainy day. We didn't go to the gym. And these lizards, these big lizards, we'd be walking across like the banisters.
Right.
And I said, wait a minute, let me tell you what I did. And I said, see that lizard? I trained that sucker. Now watch, he's going to go five steps and do push-ups. No matter where you go, you got to have a sense of humor.
Angelo, did Foreman train close to Muhammad, or were
He trained right across the way from us. And we used to spy on him. I used to borrow Howard Bingham's telescopic lens and watch him from behind the hiding spots. We're like little kids, you know. Because you don't see nothing in the gym. There's nothing to check, you know. But we had fun. So this is the whole key, you know. People don't realize to excel at what you do, you got to have fun with it. And we always had fun with Muhammad every day. Every day, 19 years, I had fun, you know, so what the hell? This is what it's all about.
Angelo, was the weather a factor in that fight, the heat in the former Zaire?
Well, you got to remember, we trained in Florida, Miami. Muhammad loves the heat. In fact, to this day, Muhammad calls me, he threatens me, he's going to come down and sweat. I says, please do.
Do you think the heat bothered Big George more than it did Muhammad?
Well, no. I just think it was meant to be, you know, this is what happens in boxing. Isn't that a horrible career to have, you know, if somebody out there can lick you? Isn't that tough? I mean, you're a great fighter, and there's somebody out there might do a number on you. The only guy that didn't taste that was Rocky Marciano, God bless him, because he retired undefeated. And another kid from Thailand retired undefeated.
Angelo, looking back on the Rumble in the Jungle, would that fight have happened without the electric-haired man, Don King?
No, he was in the right place at the right time. Had the connections, the complexions to give us the right direction. That's what Muhammad used to say about me. Angelo got the connections and the direction to give me the right direction. That's right. So we applied it the other way. No, it was meant to be. Don King's a hell of a promoter. He went there and they wanted to name their country a new name, you know, get rid of that Belgian Congo thing, and then name their country Zaire. And Mobutu's a very, very, you know, that Zaire's a big country. And I think it's bigger than the United States. Yeah, big. And this guy ran it. He was a remarkable guy. He used to go all his provinces by helicopter. He was a hell of a man.
Angelo, where does the Rumble in the Jungle rate in the Muhammad Ali legacy?
Well, it's got to be one of the greatest happenings, the changing of a name government. Well, Muhammad, you know, was a happening any place we ever went. You know, I get letters 10 a week maybe, you know, letting us want pictures and stuff like that. It's remarkable, you know, because here I was with a guy who was a living legend. And in his career now, I'm his fistic voice. Because the guy can't talk, and I know it breaks his heart. He loved to talk. He loved it because he loved talking to the media. He enjoyed that. And I pride myself with that. I pushed him towards that because if you want to be a superstar, these guys will make you a superstar. And, you know, that's why he was so great with the media. He was the first superstar that did that. Never happened before.
That's the late Hall of Fame boxing trainer Angelo Dundee, who died exactly 5 years ago on February 1st, 2012, at age 90. The Voice of America is officially celebrating its 75th birthday today, Wednesday, February 1st. And joining us now with a 75th anniversary message is the Voice of America's director, Amanda Bennett.
Seventy-five years ago, Voice of America made its first broadcast. Today, we broadcast in over 45 languages all over the world. We broadcast in every means that people could possibly want to receive their news and information. We use radio still. We use television. We broadcast for the web, for mobile, and if new forms of communication are invented, we'll be there too. Our mission is really, really simple. We give neutral, fair, objective, independent news and information to people who have no other access to it. And we tell America's story. And America's story is rich and full. It goes from the entrepreneurial climate of Silicon Valley to our great universities to health and medicine and medical advances. It's also the story of America's diaspora, the people who came here from all over the world. I started my journalistic career more than 50 years ago. And here today at Voice of America, I remember just why I became a journalist. It's such a privilege to be working here with the great men and women who are telling America's story and providing neutral news and information around the world. I'm so happy to be here at Voice of America as it celebrates its 75th anniversary. And I feel proud to welcome it into the next 75 years.
Voice of America!
My name is Segun Adeyemi, nicknamed Segun Dot on the Spot Adeyemi, by former VOA Chief of English to Africa, Barry Mon. I worked as a stringer for the VOA for 29 years, during which I hosted an African sports program, Nightline Africa Sports. I stopped working for VOA in 2016 when I was appointed special assistant to the Nigerian president. My long years with the VOA and the wide reach of the radio station raised my profile, gave me much leverage, and opened my eyes to what is possible. The Sunny Side of Sports, the popular program hosted by Sonny Young, was my main platform as a stringer until I became the host of Nightline Africa Sports in my last 10 years with the VOA. Thank you, VOA, for a great opportunity, and congratulations on this 75th anniversary.
Thank you, Segun. For more on the Voice of America's 75th anniversary, I'm joined now by my VOA colleague, Doug Bernard. Happy anniversary, Doug.
Thank you. Very happy anniversary to you and to all our listeners as well.
What can you tell our listeners about that very first VOA broadcast?
So let's go back to February 1st, 1942. The United States was just about 7 weeks, just 7 weeks, after the surprise attack by Japanese in Pearl Harbor, and then America's subsequent entry into the Second World War on both fronts, on both the Pacific front and the European front as well. Now, there was no Voice of America. There was no Operation set up. So in 7 weeks, they quickly stitched something together. In fact, they borrowed some transmission facilities and frequencies from the BBC, which had been in business for some time. And in a tiny, tiny little New York studio on February 1st, the first man to ever speak, the first voice ever to speak, was a guy named William Harlan Hale. He had worked at Vanity Fair, at the Washington Post, at Fortune. He was a longtime journalist. He also spoke German. And so the first words that he spoke on The Voice of America were in German. He said, "Hier spricht eine Stimme aus Amerika." Here speaks a voice from America, and went on to tell people that the news may be good, the news may be bad, but we shall tell you the truth. Those words, I know, for those of us who work here, you know, that's a mantra. I wanted to take a quick second, and I never do this, plug a book by a guy named Alan Hale. Alan Hale was a former deputy director of The Voice of America, longtime journalist. He wrote a book called simply Voice of America, A History. Alan Heil, his last name, H-E-I-L. It's terrific. And it begins with a story from a colleague who actually hired me, Al Pessin. You may remember Al Pessin.
I remember Al.
He was in Beijing covering the Tiananmen Square protests. And the Voice of America was reporting factually about what was happening, about the tons or hundreds of thousands of Chinese students, of workers, people in the streets at the time. And of course, the government was saying, no, no such thing is happening. It's all just foreign propaganda and whatnot. So Al went out into the streets one night. This is only about 2 days before, 2 nights before the Tiananmen massacre. He goes out into the streets and he finds, again, tens, hundreds of thousands of Chinese all huddled to their radios, all listening to their radios in English and in Chinese. They're listening to the Voice of America. They're listening to the Voice of America because they see what the reality with their eyes, right? They hear that their government is lying to them, and they hear that we are telling them the accurate, truthful story. And that, I think, that's just a brilliant moment that really encapsulates what it is that we try to do here.
Doug, one Voice of America program that I used to listen to, Talk to America. I know you had a special relationship with that show.
I used to listen to Talk to America. I was so fortunate to be the host of Talk to America. Talk to America was the first international daily call-in program. It began in the late 80s, early 90s. The first host was Larry King, if you can believe that or not. So I never wore the suspenders, but it was and as the program had evolved, it was, you know, we were incorporating, this is before mobile phones and all this kind of stuff, but we were incorporating text messages and email messages and letters people would write in, of course, phone calls, that kind of thing, anything we could to have a global conversation. And you never knew day to day what that conversation was going to be. I remember, you know, sometimes we would be speaking with the children of Jacques Cousteau, and we would be talking about, you know, the health of the world's oceans, and people would be calling in from Australia or Indonesia, or we might be talking about you know, something happening in the news. I remember certainly during the London bombings in the metro station there, we were having live, people were calling in from the streets of London, telling us what they see, what they know. It was just a daily adventure. It was such a pleasure to do it. I miss it daily. It was, I think, one of the most exciting things, well, perhaps professionally, I've ever done.
Doug, if I can put you on the spot, how about less than five words on radio? What does radio mean to you?
Intimate, friend, and this is going to be a few words more. Stories in the mind, stories of the mind. Radio, it's a voice, it's a person. You invite that person in. It is so intimate, and it's just such a brilliant storytelling mechanism.
VOA's Doug Bernard. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the February 1st VOA 75th Anniversary Edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is a leader in supporting the clearance of dangerous remnants of war all over the world. Since 1993, we have invested more than $2.6 billion to clear or destroy landmines, unexploded ordnance, and other dangerous conventional weapons and munitions. In doing so, we are helping post-conflict communities to recover and to rebuild. One of our success stories is Zimbabwe's Burma Valley. Located on Zimbabwe's border with Mozambique, Burma Valley is a hot, low-lying area where generation after generation of farmers planted tobacco and fruit trees. But due to its strategic position, in the 1970s during Zimbabwe's War of Liberation, thousands upon thousands of landmines were sown throughout the area to prevent cross-border raids by guerrilla fighters. By the time the war ended in 1980, Zimbabwe was peppered with very dense, unfenced minefields. Even to this day, Zimbabwe is one of the most highly mine-impacted countries in the world. Leftover landmines and unexploded munitions stand in the way of post-conflict stabilization and inhibit long-term development. They render thousands of acres of land unusable and destabilize communities, and the remnants of war continue to claim new victims. Since 1980, more than 1,500 Zimbabwean people and 120,000 livestock have been killed in landmine accidents. Indeed, in some districts, the cattle are trained to move to pasture in a single file to minimize their exposure to anti-personnel landmines. One of the organizations working to clear landmines in Zimbabwe is Norwegian People's Aid. With support and funding provided by the United States, this group surveyed Burma Valley and cleared the landmines, completing operations in 2015. This effort to help Zimbabwe safely clear landmines and unexploded munitions has made a life-changing difference for area residents. The farmers have moved back, rebuilding homes and cattle corrals, and tilling and planting the recently demined fields. Over the last 4 years, the United States has provided more than $7.6 million for humanitarian demining in Zimbabwe, $3 million of it in 2016 alone. The United States is investing in mine and explosive clearance because by doing so, we not only protect civilians from explosive remnants of war, but we also enable lasting peace.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I am your host Shaka Sali. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, the 28th African Union Summit, voting for a new leader, discussing the re-entry of Morocco, and mapping the future of the continent. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
That AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minutes newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.